The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM Stereo.
In conversation with Traffic Warden.
Yes, indeed. It's time to be in conversation with what's happening in Africa. Weekly Africa Report with Dr. Paul Kariuki. He is Executive Director, Democracy Development Program at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and convener of the Africa Policy Circle. His Twitter handle is at KaylanPK. KaylanPK, that's his Twitter handle. But Dr. Paul Kariuki, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show.
And of course, first off the bat, SADC to deploy a 3,000-strong military force to northern Mozambique, a decision they made. I'm hoping, I'm sure, as you are hoping, that this is going to be a peacekeeping force as against an offensive force.
Yes, I think it sounds exactly how you're describing it. However, still, it's yet to be clarified on which way it will go, because if you may recall, the Mozambican government was a bit reluctant in allowing an outside force to come and fight the insurgency within their own sovereign state. So it depends on, at this point in time, because it's still an unfolding scenario, on which way the Mozambican government might go. So they might go with the first option, that they allow this troop to come in and kind of reinforce them to for peacekeeping purposes, or they may choose to go the other route, you know, as they had declared earlier, that they would like to, you know, they are a sovereign state, so they have their own armed forces. So perhaps maybe the enforcement for them is to train their own armed forces to be able to fight the insurgency, and perhaps be assisted with the logistical support. So either way, it has to be about peacekeeping and peace maintaining, because the situation in the country is dire, and if it continues with so far the assistance from the SADC region, it will definitely be getting out of hand.
And of course, I mean, Mozambique have played themselves into a corner, because I think it was over the weekend Total has announced that they have pulled out completely. There's a special clause in an exploration contract that they've got where they can pull out if circumstances warrant it, and they've pulled out.
Yes. You see, now this is where it becomes even more trickier, because you can see the interest now are shaping just what one would have expected around the political interest in economic partnership rather than peacekeeping. And so when situations like this come, often appear, such partners are not really there interested in the peace development of the regions where they work, or the countries where they're working, rather. They are interested in what they were actually there for, first and foremost, which is economic exploitation. And so what this does, it opens up the country to other competing forces, of course, from countries like Portugal, in the United States already, who have shown extreme interest in the situation in Mozambique. But you can never rule out opportunities for economic exploitation because of the natural resources found in the country that they're interested in. So it's an unfortunate situation, because it complicates the peace building opportunity, but at the same time also they are looking after I would imagine the Italians are also looking after their own interest. And so if they see there's a very remote chance of them, you know, going further with the exploration that jeopardizes not only their lives, but also the deal becomes less lucrative, yes, they will pull out.
And of course, there's a lot at stake, because if things are done properly, and we have no hope in that, but if they had been done properly, so much to gain, not just for the people in Cabo Delgado, which is one of the poorest parts of northern Mozambique, but KwaZulu-Natal, Richards Bay is a port, South Africa, because it would give us close access to much cheaper gas and oil, much cheaper energy resources. at the moment, it's all up in smoke.
Yes, it is. And a very interesting scenario there, as you painted, because it's just recently we've been seeing from the different media houses that South Africa is intending to have these petrol port ships. you know, so you would wonder who is actually at play here, whose forces are actually controlling the access to such natural resources, because now that it's an open game for anyone, interest can shift very fast. And depends on what interests, political interests, are actually being protected or being advanced. Then it could be either an alternative for, select region countries, South Africa, to start thinking, you know, maybe they can start exploiting there and have South African companies, you know, get a piece of the deal so that they can actually go and do exploitation. Or alternatively, it may be costlier in terms of opening up the region, including South Africa, to threaten, security, because insurgencies that are around Cabo Delgado, they probably would assume that South Africa wants to get involved, you know, in really trying to stop their interests. So South Africa will weigh, and I'm sure other SADC countries will weigh seriously with the options available to them before they step in even to think that they can actually be involved in exploitation of the natural resource there.
Yeah, I think this is a story we're going to be discussing for many months to come.
Yeah.
But let's go on to another story that never, ever goes away, Lesotho. I can remember we had days of our lives when Mr. Thabane, the previous Prime Minister, was under charges of killing, or his wife killing a lover, or a lover killing a wife. Okay, let's not get into that area. But current Prime Minister, Mr. Mokete Majoro, no longer has a majority, and according to Lesotho constitution, if you don't have a majority, you are not in government anymore. So drama in Lesotho.
Definitely. It's an unfortunate situation that is also building there. Although on the surface, it looks like a very calm kingdom, but inside it's actually always on a tight edge in many times, especially as far as political issues are concerned. Yes, the potential split would definitely put a spanner in the works for Prime Minister Majoro, because technically he will not be able to be in government, and therefore meaning losing political power to be able to influence any meaningful political or economic direction for the country, even now as it, you know, it fights the pandemic and trying to make sure that they preserve lives and livelihoods. So it's a serious destruction from the main area of focus, which will be definitely mitigating against COVID-19. But be that may, the kingdom has always, you know, faced ongoing political conflict that seems not to be able to go away, and it's not going to happen that in any time soon. Because over the last couple of years, there's no any prime minister who has stayed their full term, which is the number one concern. Mm. Yeah, and which means the political setup in the kingdom is always about after power, and therefore it means that there is probably very minimal chances of real solution to get this matter solved to an extent where it can assure stability in the kingdom, because as soon as one prime minister is settling down, the others are already scheming the next. And therefore, the potential threat is destabilization again in the region to add up to what's already happening in Mozambique. And I don't think South Africa, especially for this one, I would suspect South Africa will have keen interest to ensure that the kingdom does not degenerate to a place where it will cause political instability, not only in the kingdom, but also for South Africa, because of the closeness of the two countries, and at the same time also whatever happens in the kingdom can easily, get its way into South Africa. And therefore, I'm foreseeing a process where the president's representative, former judge Moseneke might be involved perhaps in the behind-the-scenes kind of interventions to make sure that the situation doesn't get to a place where it becomes a political management project.
Yes, one hopes it doesn't get there. Because, I mean, you know, Lesotho and Swaziland, I find it so strange. We've got these two tiny countries in the middle of South Africa, and people from Lesotho speak Sotho, which is a South African language, Swaziland as well. I mean, it's almost like they're artificial bubbles giving South Africa permanent headaches.
Yes, and this is where it becomes very tricky, because the political in South Africa's political interests in the kingdom are very much aligned to her own stability internally. And you may recall there was always that scenario where migration management was becoming a headache because of, you know, the two country citizens have intermarried and established families on both sides of the border. And therefore, it was becoming almost very difficult to manage who stays and who doesn't and who acquires, you know, what level of citizenship and that. So the interest from South Africa to ensure that it's actually the kingdom is at peace is very much prime to them. And I'm foreseeing a process where they will take serious steps in ensuring that the situation is addressed in a different way, that it doesn't have to involve political management, or it actually prevented to become even worse. But it might be a little bit too late in the game, because the current prime minister has already, you know, fired the four ministers who are allegedly accused to be, you know, in the process of forming the splinter party. So that alone already creates some level of discomfort within the political ecosystem in the country, and very soon it might start also start, you know, shaking things around the SADC region itself, because remember the former Prime Minister, and so, and remember, South Africa was very quick in intervening in his case just to make sure that, you know, by him being exposed to any potential litigation, especially with the accusation that he was involved in the murder of his second wife, they would want to make sure that he doesn't get to that place again, because it's going to be critical to be held. And if it gets to a place where it threatens not only just internal country but regional country, then you can imagine what might happen in Lesotho itself. So whilst it's still unfolding on the next steps, but I'm sure the SADC leadership is watching that very closely.
And let's hope that they can resolve that one. Our final story today, U.S. warns Africa against China's growing role in the region. Okay, we know Zambia was unable to pay back some of her debts to China. What do you make of this, America come lately?
Well, again, this is always an ongoing discussion on the continent, especially lately, as regards to Chinese relationship with Africa, to a great extent viewed that not to be, a good relationship that is meant to prosper African and especially African people themselves, because of perceived unequal terms of engagement from trade to investments to political management and everything that goes with democratic processes. And so I think what the U.S. government may have seen as an opportunity to win back Africans' attention towards the United States, as you may remember, the former President Donald Trump had nothing to do with this continent. Actually, remember, he called us names. So,
he did, yes.
So the Biden administration may want to be seen to be favorable to Africa, and they, of course, they found a way to get the attention of African leadership and use the soft points, like, for example, the continent is trying as best as it can to recover from, you know, the effects of COVID-19. So it's desperately in need of financial resources to recover, and it goes for the softer parts. Even if you think about it, when you speak about health, health on this continent is a very powerful soft spot to get the attention of governments, because majority were found wanting. And so it's very strategic for United States to start, you know, bringing that conversation into this scenario, because that weakens Chinese interest. They're not very much interested in health promotion. They're interested much in infrastructure development. Meanwhile, the primary need of our continent at this time is, at least in the foreseeable future, is to strengthen our health capacity. So that is often exacerbated by the ongoing dishing of loans, which the American government may be seeing as a trap to make Africa totally dependent on China for anything that they have to, she has to do to prosper herself. And of course, the American government would use that as a weak point. But of course, they are also forgetting that, you know, when we had the structural adjustment reforms package in the early 80s to 90s, they did exactly the same to the continent. It's amazing how quickly economic superpowers can forget each other's blind spots.
No, absolutely. And of course, we've seen Nigeria getting closer to the U.S. Nigeria had a really tough time under Trump. And Kenya, which traditionally has always had a warm relationship with the U.S. I mean, Kenya was one of the places that former President Barack Obama visited, so Biden must be quite familiar with that particular play.
Yes. You'd understand why President Muhammadu would want to, Buhari, would want to get involved and trying to make it work for Nigeria, because you can imagine the population of Nigerians in U.S. is really quite profound. And therefore, from an economic development point of view, it will be beneficial for Nigeria to make sure that there is at least better migration processes that would have assist majority of the Nigerian families and people who would want to migrate from Nigeria to go to the United States, that is ease of access to into the country. President Trump made it very difficult and just made it so hard for Nigerians to acquire any visas, including, even diplomatic visas to be able to do business in the United States. So it's a strategic move on the part of President Buhari to ease that relationship and make it manageable, so that it can work out for Nigerians as a whole. And any president would want to make it work for their citizens, and because also, despite the many negative views that Africans may be having about United States, given the recent violent attacks by white people over black Americans, we still, United States remains a strategic partner for Africa in many ways. And therefore, we cannot rule that out. And so I think President Buhari is looking at the bigger picture on how United States can still gain a foothold on the continent, and definitely being, remember that just recently, we had Dr. Ngozi, who had just been appointed the Secretary General for the World Trade Organization. So if you put all these geopolitical factors in together, you'll see why President Buhari would want to ease the relationship between Nigeria and the U.S., and of course in the broader context of Africa and United States.
And of course, Nigeria, despite the problems that it has that are similar to ours, I always feel, it's just a personal view, is such an underrated country in terms of its contribution and its potentiality.
Indeed. I don't have statistics on me right now, but it's been alleged in different, by research institutions of the great number of Nigerian experts that are working in the United States and, contributing in different ways in the economy of that country, in very legitimate ways. But, of course, there's always a portion that does the opposite. But so it's a key strategic country when it comes to global development, and especially in also spearheading the African dream, that is to put Africa in global spaces as key contributors, not just as passive takers of global policies. And so because of that significant contribution, intellectually and otherwise, Nigeria is a very strategic country that needs to, I think, in my personal view, you cannot talk about African development in the global space without talking about Nigerian contribution.
Absolutely. Dr. Paul Kariuki, Executive Director, Democracy Development Program at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and convener of the Africa Policy Circle. It's a pleasure chatting to you as always.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show. Have a good afternoon.